This week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show is sponsored by Playdigious and the launch of their new puzzle game, The Almost Gone. Available now on the iOS App Store and Nintendo Switch.
I know a magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish. For the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds. And the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. Touch Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 451, I'm guessing, because I didn't actually look it up.
Sounds right to me.
We're joining you on, I am fact-checking myself on this one. Joining you a little bit early this week, it is Thursday, the 25th.
Yes, Thursday, June 25th, 2020.
And it is episode 451. I've just confirmed. That's very important to know. Joining you a day early, but that's not a big deal because there's kind of a lot to talk about. This is WWDC week.
Yeah.
Which totally caught me off guard. I think I didn't realize that until it was sometime over the weekend when it was like Apple keynote Monday at 10 a.m. and I was like, what? That's weird.
It's weird how these events just kind of like sneak up on you if you don't have plans to like go to them and stuff, right? Because like,
yeah,
GDC kind of felt the same way because like usually it's like, you have all this travel you booked, you are like getting your suitcase together and like all this other crap, then it was like, oh, GDC just like happened.
Yeah, I know. I guess. It's super strange, and so. But kind of cool, too, because this was a big deal, WWDC, as far as the keynote was concerned. And it actually brought up the conversation I think we had last week talking about, like, E3 and these digital events that have been going on with all, like, the pre-prepared video things and stuff. I really, really liked how Apple did theirs. I thought it was super well done and super, like, information-packed. And I think the only thing you lose out on is like the crowd interaction, because it's always fun to like see what people cheer at or boo at or indifferent to or whatever.
It had like makes sense, but it had like an extremely rehearsed vibe to me.
Extremely rehearsed, like you're watching a really well done infomercial or something like that. But at the same time, I liked it. It was a lot easier to focus on and like. I feel like when they're doing their live on stage events, it can be easy to sort of just drift off when like one of the speakers is talking or something like that, or especially during the live demos of things can go real, real quiet, real quick and just become totally easy to tune out to. And so I thought at least in terms of all that stuff, the pre-made video keynote was a lot cooler because it kind of was like, there was no hitches or anything. There was no like dead time. It was all just demos that were like tightly rehearsed and edited down and just showed you kind of the stuff you needed to know. I thought it was really nice. Yeah. And I would not be mad at all. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a way they can do some sort of hybrid live thing, but also prepared demo video thing. I don't know.
Well, but this just kind of like goes to what we've been kind of talking about in the past with regards to like how you just don't need to do in-person events anymore. Like this keynote was arguably just as good, if not better, because like everything was in the can, right? There was no like weird technical glitches or anything else. Like it was just all 100% prepared and ready to go.
And I wonder too, like how far ahead that video was done. Because Apple's also famously, not just Apple, any company really, but when they do these big keynotes, you hear rumors of like, oh, something came down to like the night before, or like the morning of, they had to make some big change and cancel something or change something or whatever. So when you have this video like that, I guess you technically still could be like making edits and stuff up until the moment of. But the seeing how much space it filled out, I mean, it was darn near 2 hours. Which is about how their normal keynotes are. it didn't seem like they made any drastic changes, and it kind of makes me wonder, like, up to what point are they like, okay, this is the confirmed stuff because we got to film this like video, which is kind of an interesting thing too. So
what,
but anyway,
I was trying to figure out is like I kept like getting distracted, being like, is this a green screen or does like the Apple office just look like ultra super duper clean? Because like both are equally plausible, right?
And same when they did the transitions from different buildings or to different floors, I was like, is this a real drone flying around their campus filming, or is this all like crazy computer graphic stuff? I couldn't tell the difference. It was like right at that uncanny valley level, which was, I don't know, it's kind of neat. But yeah, I thought it was overall pretty entertaining. A lot easier to watch than some other keynotes I've seen from Apple. So I thought that was cool. And then pretty heavily information packed. The very big announcement was something that's been rumored for years, but it's finally a reality, is they're going to move to ARM-based Macs, and they're going to be building their own chips for their Macs from now on, which just makes total sense. I mean, when you look at what they've been doing in iPhones and iPads for a very long time now, being very far ahead of the game, being able to make their own main chips, but also like their array of like secondary chips to do other stuff. Just the amount of like performance you get, the amount of like battery life you can get. And I don't know, they just got a really nice blend of being able to control everything themselves. And it just makes perfect sense to bring that to their Macs too. Making an entire line of computers switch over to being ARM-based is such a drastic change in the entire industry. It's kind of like one of those things that I feel like Apple's one of the only companies that could do something like this, because it's not like Microsoft hasn't had, you know, ARM-based laptop prototypes and talked about this sort of thing before. And there's like Windows on ARM-like projects and stuff like that. But
I feel like there's an ARM-based Windows Surface, wasn't there? Or maybe I'm crazy.
There might be.
Maybe that was just discussed. I don't remember.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is like, it feels like when Apple does things like this, it's like, okay, like this will actually cause an actual change in sort of the tide of how things are going. And I feel like that comes off kind of douchey, but I don't mean it douchey. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they led the charge in getting rid of the headphone jack, or getting rid of the drives in their computers over the years, the optical drives and stuff like that. And even things like supporting USB, which was like a really radical, weird thing at the time when the iMac came out. And now you look and like USB is like everywhere, and it's become the standard, like it was always envisioned to be, instead of every computer you buy having like 9 different serial ports on the back. So
yeah, it's kind of like, I'm really kind of curious to see what kind of performance it can actually get out of these chips when they're in like a desktop or laptop environment, right? Because like if you look at the benchmarks of the latest iPad Pros, like even going back like even like, you know, 2 or 3 generations, it was like they were benchmarking like almost in line with like MacBook Pros, you know, and that's in a form factor that's mobile, that's, you know, you know, doesn't have any kind of active cooling or anything along those lines. And it's really, I'm really anxious to see like what they're able to do when, so I guess it's going to go one or two ways, right? So it's like, you know, if you have a form factor like the iMac that's more than big enough to have active cooling with fans and all that kind of stuff to, you know, run these processors a little bit more hot with a little more power going, well, as much power as you want, because it's plugged into the wall. Are those just going to like have performance that's just like absolutely insane, or are they going to adjust the design so like the iMac is like as thin as the iPad Pro, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a lot of exciting directions all of this can go.
Yeah.
And it'll be really exciting to see how the rest of the computer industry goes too. Because right now, so the way they're handling it is sort of how they handled when they switched to Intel chips like 15 years ago, which is sending out
that long ago, really?
I believe so, yeah. Sending out, you can, as a developer, you can apply for a developer development kit, which is just a Mac Mini, with the A12X chip from the iPad Pro. I think that's what it is,
You know
A12X.
what I thought they were going to do with this was I thought they were going to be like, and guess what? If you install this like special beta, your iPad Pro is a ARM developer kit, like a
Yeah, a lot
Mac
of people were
ARM
talking about
developer
that
kit.
because they're out there, and it would kind of make sense to do something like that.
Like if it was
But no,
like
they
all you
actually,
need is a USB-C hub that gives you know like the ports and stuff and you're like ready to roll, that would have been
I feel
nuts.
like they might have an issue with running desktop software on an iPad like that because they've always talked about how, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was what I suspected. It was like, I bet, I'm sure they can totally do that. You know, it doesn't make any sense why they wouldn't be
Probably,
able to, but I think that like they really want to keep like that demarcation of like, no, this is an iOS device. It only can run iOS, and this is a Mac device. It
We need
runs
to send
Mac
you a
OS.
Mac to do Mac stuff,
Because like I think that there would be a ton of people like myself included that would be like, oh, cool. Well, let me just run Mac OS on my iPad. Like I don't care about this iOS stuff. Like, because that really would be like the dream mobile device for me is like the iPad Pro with that case that has the trackpad on it, running Mac OS, you know, like.
Or I could also see them. Well, I don't know. I don't actually know if they could do this, but or I mean, they could do this, or if they would do this. It's kind of against Apple's whole ethos. But MacBook Airs are super thin. They're not much different than an iPad with a case on it. And then, so why not have your laptops just be that iPad with a case on it that runs? You can boot into iOS or you can boot into Mac OS, depending on what you want to do or
Yeah,
whatever.
well, it feels like we're
Which is what the Surface is
right.
in a lot of ways, but
Yeah.
I did, and that's why I kind of can't see Apple doing that, but I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, the
'Cause I'd rather I don't have an iPad that I use regularly because I use my laptop and it's fine. And if I'm not using my laptop, I'm using my phone. There's no spot for me to really fit an iPad into my life. But if my iPad was my Mac, I'd probably use a lot of the features of an iPad because they're there, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
So if I
that
could
makes sense.
fold the screen over and have it be a touchscreen laptop or a touchscreen tablet, I'd be pretty excited about that. So.
It really wouldn't surprise me if, like, by this time, I don't know, the next year or the year after, if, like, iOS and macOS just become, like, one blended experience and it all just kind of comes down to, like, where on the slider you want your experience to be. Like, do you want to just have, like, the super mobile experience? Okay, cool. Like, you have all these mobile formatted apps or whatever. Or do you want it to be kind of like a more fuller desktop experience? Because we can do that too, because it's all the same hardware. And particularly like when they're like that really got me thinking that direction when they were like, oh, and you can just you know, on your Mac, if you want to just download iOS apps, just grab them straight from the App Store. They work on your Mac and all that stuff. So like, why should the inverse not be true? You know?
Yeah, I thought that was crazy too because obviously there's going to be some apps where the experience is real bad when you're doing that, but there's going to be a lot where it's not a big deal. You're using the mouse cursor as like your finger pointer and it's fine and it's going to translate really well. And like their demo was they showed you could play Monument Valley on your Mac and it's the same version you bought on your phone already. That's neat. Like that's a neat added benefit. And I feel like as long as people, because there's a lot of talk too about like, oh, well, Mac developers aren't going to bother making Mac software anymore. If you can just make an iPhone or iPad app and just deploy it everywhere, they're not going to bother making it like a Mac-like experience.
Yeah, it puts the Mac App
And
Store in a weird spot, right?
I think that that won't be true really because I think Mac users still appreciate having good apps that are made for like a desktop Mac experience. And
But I guess like if you
I
think
think
about it, like the iPad, ever since they added the mouse support, right? Like most stuff these days is universal. Most and now that, you know, mouse support is a thing, I've seen developers like rapidly adding stuff to make the mouse support better on the iPad, you know? So like if you've got an app for the iPad Pro that, you know, assumes a bigger screen and now updated to include not only keyboard support but also mouse support, like, you know, how different really is that experience when you're running it on your actual Mac, you know?
That I would, in a case like that, I would say not. I'd say it's basically the same thing. You don't really need a different, I mean, you probably just need to spec for different, screen sizes and stuff like that. But like, and something like that, I feel like you wouldn't need to change the Mac version too much, from how you already have the iPad version set up if you have all those essentially computer features built in. But
Right.
I also think like Mac developers are going to keep making Mac apps that are built for the Mac that are the best experience as a laptop or a desktop experience. And then, I look at all the iOS stuff working on Mac as just an added bonus to where it's maybe not the best experience, but it's like, oh, hey, I just need a dumb, weather app or something like that that you can get, and it works fine if you run it as an iOS app on your Mac. But it's not necessarily like ideal or something you want to use heavily or whatever. So,
Yeah, I
but
don't know.
I don't know.
I guess the way I look at it is like I would rather, as someone that is depressingly integrated into the Mac, the Apple ecosystem, between my freaking iPad, iPhone, Apple Watch, MacBook, you name it, Apple TVs. I love the idea of a buy once software experience that just like works in different ways everywhere. Like take for instance, like Panics Transmit, for instance, right? Like maybe that. So that's a file transfer program, if anyone listening doesn't know what it is. So maybe that like on your phone is like just a way to kind of like view files that are on like remote storage things that you're connecting to. And maybe on the iPad Pro, like you take that functionality a little farther. Like maybe you can like interact with files in a greater way because you have a keyboard and stuff. And like maybe the Apple TV experience is similar to the phone experience, but then on the Mac, it's just how it is on the Mac,
The full
like.
thing,
And when you think
Yeah,
about
I'm
like
actually
the core functionality doesn't need to change that much. It's just a matter of like, the UI kind of unlocking different levels of complexity based on the, platform, I guess.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And it kind of reminds me of how, like, for a long time, one of the hot things to do was make like a companion app for like a console or PC game or whatever, which was sort of like similar. It's like, hey, you're on your phone, so you can check leaderboards or add friends or do achievements or something like that, or use that as your in-game map or whatever. It was like these smaller experiences based on the device that it was on. I can see sort of similar things happening in different software programs across the different devices like that, which could be kind of cool. But I also think we are probably heading towards convergence between iPads and laptops because they are getting too similar. But I think Mac's or Apple's really trying to stick to their guns about the things they've said in the past, which I still do think are true. I feel like you could get around that being like, well, it's not a touchscreen Mac. It's an iPad with a super nice keyboard that you can fold all the way around and use as a tablet as a touchscreen.
Well,
Or,
so you know what? I keep thinking back to it. I don't know why. It's just like one of these conversations I like extremely distinctly remember was a million years ago, back in like I don't know 2008 or something like that, 2009 maybe even. I went to for right when TouchArcade was brand new, I went to this media event in New York City, and that was like the first time I met like the Freeverse guys. Like I had known Bruce from Freeverse like for random internet friends like a million years ago or whatever, and like I just remember like him like bullshitting about like what he thought like the future of all this stuff was going to go, because like for him or for Freeverse, it was like Freeverse was a company that was like a hardcore like Mac studio. They were like one of the only companies that like were like one of the dedicated like we make Mac games kind of people. So the iPhone for them was like a huge turning point because it like took their weird little like niche business that did fine because Mac people were totally happy spending like whatever on a kind of simple game because it's there are not a lot of games on the Mac, right? To like the App Store basically like just leapfrogging them as a business, right? And for whatever reason, I just remember this like Bruce like holding his phone up and being like, in the future, like you'll just have this, and you can just like if you want it instead of your computer, you just slide it into the side of your computer and like everything else. And as like your phone being the thing that like stores things and the things that process things, and like really the only difference being what kind of stuff you have hooked up to display and what interface you choose to use on it. And like the more I kind of like think about the way that like ARM is going, I'm like, damn, that guy is like potentially like really on the money, right? Because if you think about it, like, and they're able to continue iterating on the performance of these chips. I mean, like, the current iPhone Pro processor or whatever, like if you look at the benchmarks, it's like just as good as an iMac that's like, you know, 2 years ago or something like that, maybe even sooner. I don't remember, but it was like, and you know, I feel like for most people that use their computer, you know, like when you look at like how just a normal person uses their computer, it's like to do, you know, like photos and video stuff, look at Facebook, you know, check email and stuff. Like, so I would think like for a lot of people, like an iMac that works on ARM, that has macOS that works on ARM, that your phone just like intelligently knows like, oh, okay, I'm in the iMac dock. Let me switch over to like Mac mode. Like that seems like, I don't know, like the biggest slam dunk imaginable.
Yeah, I mean, I would love if I only had to have one device that could do that many different things based on whatever my needs were.
And like when you talk about convergence, like to me, like that's that's what comes to mind is like these mobile processors just getting fast enough that like you can just use them for like normal desktop tasks. I mean, like it's hard to imagine, although, you know, who knows, but it's like hard to imagine like, you know, plugging your phone and being like, all right, I'm going to do some like serious pro work using my phone processor. But again, for like, you know what, 95% of the people probably use their computer for, like that kind of stuff would be 100% totally fine, like no big deal. So I don't know.
I forget what company does that now with some of the Android phones.
The Motorola Atrix was the first one that did that.
Oh, really? Where you slide the phone in as basically the trackpad of the laptop or whatever?
Yeah, I saw a demo of it and it like crashed every single time they pulled it in or out. I had like the worst sense of proxy embarrassment ever, because it's just like, it's like I know how hard these guys just want to show me how cool this is, and it's like, oh, hang on, let me reboot the phone because it just crashed. But yeah, I don't know. I just hope that the software transition is as smooth as they say it is, because like, did you go through the how early did you get an Intel based Mac? Like,
transition? Well, let's see. So if they switched in, was it 2006 or something like that?
Yeah, I guess so.
So I had
probably would have had iMac. Like a iBook or iMac or something like that.
It would have been the one I bought. So it would have been like a year or two after, or no, actually that's not true. It would have been right around that same time. I don't remember if my desktop iMac that I used to have was PowerPC or Intel, because I didn't care about such things back then at all. It was just like a Mac computer to me. But then before that, I had the iMac, the one that was like the pod, like the base station with the really cool arm going up with the screen, the flat screen on it. I forget what generation. G4 iMac.
The one that looks kind of like has like the bottom bulb thing, and then like
I had that computer for a very long time, and then when I upgraded it was like right after they began putting all the crap in the screen on an iMac.
So for me, I don't know what the hell was wrong with my brain at the time, but I was like, I was a day zero Intel MacBook. It fucking sucked. I mean, like, I said that I had nothing but problems on Twitter, and I had all sorts of people being like, I don't know what problem is fine for me, but it was like the hardware was wacky. I mean, like, it ran so unbelievably hot you like couldn't use it on your lap if you were doing anything serious. You know, they had Rosetta and stuff to kind of like try to make the transition a little easier, but like there was such a noticeable performance hit on Rosetta stuff that like it just really sucked that unless you used, you know, like, God, I don't even know if the iWork suite existed at the time, but like whatever, you know, like the core Apple like word processor and like all that stuff was like, if you were using anything outside of that, it just completely fucking sucked. Like most of the things that you take for granted, like if you use, you know, like Bartender or like the iStat menus or like any of the kind of like stuff that does kind of like lightweight fiddling around with like additional functionality on macOS, like straight up didn't work. And like photo, I don't think Photoshop worked out the gate either. Like it took an update that didn't come right away. Like a bunch of other stuff. It was just like, was a really rough transition. And what sucked even more was that, and this isn't really Apple's fault, but it was like the original MacBook Pros they released were Core Duo processors, and like a year later they released, or something like that, a year later, maybe a little bit more, they released the Core 2 Duo MacBook Pros, which were like way faster, ran way cooler. By that point, the software problems had like basically been fixed and everything else. And it was just kind of like one of these things where I was like, God, what the fuck? Like, why did I have to jump on
run
this
right
immediately?
Out.
And now I had like the worst experience of the whole thing when I could have just done nothing and chilled for another year and gotten like a way better computer, not have dealt with like all the software stuff and everything else. So I guess the moral of the story is like, unless you have a really, really, really good reason to, I would definitely let this one mellow for a little bit when the first ARM-based Macs come out. Because I don't know. Like, it might go better because of the learnings that they did between PowerPC and Intel, but like, unless you seriously are in a situation where you're like, God, my computer is on its absolute last leg, like, it cannot last another, like, 6 or 8 months or whatever. Because, like, the other thing to think about with this is that it's going to be interesting seeing what upgrade cycle they kind of get on with these, right? Like, are we going to see like an annual MacBook Pro refresh? Is it going to be you know, faster than that? Because like, the way that Apple worked their laptops basically up until now was like their refreshes basically kind of like trailed behind like major Intel processor releases by like a couple months or so. Which when you look on the Mac Rumors buyer's guide thing, like sometimes there's like a year and a half between like a new MacBook Pro, and sometimes it's like 4 months between new MacBook Pros, and it'll be interesting to see what they end up doing with that. So
that's a good point too, because they're already on a yearly upgrade cycle for the other silicon chips that they're making, so why wouldn't they be for Macs too?
I mean, because when you think about it, like, they could really do just like one, and I'm sure it'll take them a while to get like aligned like this potentially, but like they could just do like one September event where it's like, hey guys, this is a 2021 a whatever processor, you know, it comes in 3 different or 4 different flavors, like here's the Apple TV, here's the phone, here's the iPad, here's the Mac, and here's I guess the iPad, so 5 flavors, and just release all the shit at the same time. And that's like the 2021 Apple lineup.
Right.
I think that would be really cool, because like with the Mac computers, there's always this kind of like nebulous, like, oh, you better wait. Like, definitely buy it like right when it comes out, because like, you never know if it's going to be like, oh, you just spent $3,000 on this computer, and then like tomorrow $3,000 gets you like one that's twice as good.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see what
that's
happens.
That's true. But it'll be interesting. It was exciting to have something kind of big shakeup like that happen and become a reality, since it had been rumored for so long.
Well, what did you think
and
of
obviously
the...
that's where they are going.
No, for sure. Like, this is so telegraphed, it's not even funny. Like, what did you think of all the iOS 14 stuff?
Real happy with it, I think. I mean, I heard some people down on the iPad kind of getting the shaft or whatever, and I don't, not being a big iPad person, I didn't really notice too much. It seemed like fine, but
how do you figure what was the reasoning for the iPad getting the shaft? Because like, to me, it was just,
I don't remember specifically, like, because I think like some of the new features, so like the being able to put widgets wherever you want on any of your home screens and stuff like that, which is like a big finally, because Apple's home screens have been just this like grid of app icons forever,
since iPhone 1.0.
Yeah, it's been like way too long coming for being able to kind of mix that up. And I hardly ever use my widgets now, because they're just buried away in a place I never really visit, and unless it's by accident. And then I feel like things that are on your home screen, I will use a lot more. I like that you can kind of change their sizes too. And it seems like they have some interesting stuff going on about like the smart detection of what sort of widgets you'd want to see at what certain times of day. Like if you normally would check stocks every morning at a certain time, it'll have that widget showing on your home screen. But then later in the evening, if you're usually checking traffic on your way home from work, it'll show that one or whatever. I feel like that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah, to me, like, that's what really excited me about all this iOS 14 stuff, was that like, because my phone is an absolute disaster. I mean, like, I have like pages and pages and pages of installed shit, like. The only thing that ever kind of like really stays the same is my home screen, and that's because like of these things, I use them semi often.
Right.
But like, I love the ability to just kind of like have Siri just manage that stuff like automatically.
Yeah. especially like recently installed, is like I that is probably the only main little like folder, smart folder that I'll use, because I'm always trying to group together things that I've downloaded recently and figure out where I put them or where they went or whatever. And so I really like that. I think they call that feature app library. So basically, kind of like when you go to search, it'll be like a search slash organize all your apps by different app store categories or different genres or whatever you want. And you'll probably be able to customize a lot of that to your liking too, which I think will be really nice. And then you'll be able to just hide entire home screens if you want. So instead of having like 10 pages filled up with app icons and folders, you can just hide all that stuff and just rely on that app library feature to get you to where you need to go, which I find nowadays more often than not, I just do the like pull down search bar to find an app and open it anyway, rather than try to remember what page it's on or what folder it's in or whatever. So I feel like that'll be really nice too, just in terms of tidying up how many pages you have of like collected apps and stuff.
I mean, like I it seems like there's potential here for like through not a lot of AI to like really make your home screen experience like super, super tight. Because like particularly if like apps can link into this kind of stuff, like for instance, like I do a really kind of predictable thing with my phone most days. You know, like I'll get up in the morning, like I'll turn my little Bluetooth speaker on in the bathroom and like listen to, you know, some podcasts while I'm like getting ready, taking a shower, stuff like that. So like I feel like you could really easily be like, oh, okay, it's like 8 a.m. Oh, I just paired to this Bluetooth speaker. Okay, cool. Like let me change the main widget to Overcast and like oh, you usually listen to the daily podcast. Okay, like here, just hit play and it'll start going. Or like, oh, you're in your car. Like since I'm connected to your car, like let me change that widget to Spotify and you know, stuff like that. Like it just seems like I don't know, like, or oh, you just closed Safari, like let me change your main icon to 1Password, because that's what you always do, is like, go back and forth between the two of those, like like that kind of stuff. I think could be such a huge quality of life difference, because like right now I do all that stuff by just like basically disregarding my entire like phone full of app icons, just like swiping down and typing like a few letters, you know.
Yeah,
and the Siri search suggestions are usually pretty good for me, because like if I pull down to search at night, it's like, oh, you want to waste time on TikTok? Okay, here's TikTok like in the search suggestions without you doing anything. So I don't know. That's cool. But like one thing that was kind of weird to me is how they it seemed like they picked some like really weird things to like really overemphasize these like really crazy new features, like. Like, oh, getting a phone call doesn't take up your whole screen anymore. It's like, okay, that could have been like a bullet list item. Like, you didn't need to like demonstrate it on like all the devices. And
this is how a notification of that looks like. Like, okay, obviously.
Yeah.
That's another long time coming type of thing, though, too, that I can't believe has lasted this long, that your entire experience gets overtaken by something like that. Just seems completely silly to me.
The one thing that I either just missed because I looked away or they didn't really mention too loudly was that you could finally in iOS 14 set default apps for like your web browser and your mail and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, really? That's really nice.
That's going to be super cool, because like I the reason I use Safari instead of Chrome is like just because it's like, well, using Chrome is annoying on mobile, because it's like you have to you know, nothing automatically loads in it, and like using Chrome I can like sync all my stuff between my PC, my Mac, and now my mobile devices and stuff, because Safari doesn't exist for Windows. And I use Superhuman for my email instead of mail, and it's just real nice to be able to like click an email like and have that load instead of everything else. So
I like that.
I don't know, I'm trying to think of like other kind of like big things in iOS 14. I don't know, like it's the digital car key thing seems like it's going to be cool, but like it'll be years before I own a car that can
Same
do that here. You know, so like kind of it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, that seems neat, but whatever. I guess the picture-in-picture video stuff is cool.
That's all really cool. It definitely seemed like a lot of common sense changes. Like, obviously you should make this because it would be a way better experience. It's just taken Apple such a long time to do some of these things that have been annoying for a while.
And I feel like the the theme of these kind of like iOS updates, basically like for almost since like iOS 7 even, is like, oh, okay, this is cool, this is better.
Yeah.
You know, like it seems like it's been like a really, really long time, both on Apple like software and hardware, where something comes out and you're like, oh my God, holy shit. Like, I can't believe I even thought of that. That's like so cool.
Yeah, right.
You know, instead of just like, oh, I use this thing every day. Like, yeah, these are a few things I wish were better. Oh, cool. They made them better. Great.
Oh, neat. They do that thing that Android phones have been doing for a long time. Awesome.
Yeah. stuff like that.
No, I think it'll definitely be for the better. I'm always excited to get the new iOS updates when they come out. But one thing I have yet to do, I'm still not on Catalina, and so they're already talking about going to Big Sur. I've never upgraded from Mojave. I don't remember exactly why. I don't really have any 32-bit apps that I'm going to lose that are that big of a deal. I don't know. I think I just never got around to it, and I didn't really think about it until I was watching WWDC and being like, oh yeah, I never did upgrade my laptop to Catalina. So I feel like I should probably do that instead of jumping from Mojave straight to Big Sur, skipping one in the middle. It might not matter, but so yeah, I was going to maybe this weekend or something like that update my laptop, and then, but it's kind of scary too, because it's like, oh well, crap, is there stuff that's going to change that I'm going to lose that I'm not going to realize until it's too late?
We interrupt our regularly scheduled podcast discussion to bring you a message from our sponsor this week, Playdigious, for the launch of their new puzzle game, The Almost Gone. Explore the intricate dioramas of your life in the award-winning narrative puzzle game, The Almost Gone. Poised between life and death, you must unravel the poignant truths that led to your tragic fate. From your own home to eerily deserted streets, you must search forensically for clues and the path forwards. Why are you here? Why are you trapped and alone? Will you ever move on? Uncover the secrets and piece together the story of The Almost Gone, out now on Nintendo Switch at $14.99 and on the iOS App Store at $6.99.
So I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, but the other thing that I think is really cool is the AirPods 3D audio stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah. Super
when they good. When they originally started, when they started this announcement, my eyes started rolling, because like Apple does this thing, and anyone that's been following Apple for ages will more than recognize this, where they'll like take something that is completely normal and available in like all these other products that people just had for years and act like they just invented it, right?
Yeah, right.
So when they started going on with this like 3D audio, I'm just like sitting there thinking like, man, I remember updating like my fucking like Sound Blaster audio card in my computer I had in 1999, because the big feature was, oh, we have 3D
right.
audio. So
right,
for
right.
you guys to like come out and be like, guess what, we got 3D audio. But what actually, then they like swerved in a way that I wasn't expecting it, and that like,
yeah,
the new stuff now, it like knows where your AirPod Pro
yeah.
only, right? It's not normal AirPods.
I believe Pro only. Yeah.
It like knows where the screen that you're watching it is. So like if you're looking at your phone, it's treating it like the center channel is your phone that you're looking straight ahead at, you know, where like dialogue and stuff comes out. But if you like turn your head to the left, it knows that you are looking the other way. So it pretends like you're watching a TV, and that like that center channel now tracks to the side of your head and will be coming out like, you know, your right ear.
I really think that's going to be one of those things that's like a mind blowing when you actually experience it and start moving around and moving the screen around and having all this audio track you. I think is going to be a trip, but it's also really awesome. Like it's neat that they think of things like that that you probably wouldn't think of, because your average headphone that does like surroundy sort of tricks probably does break you out of it if you turn your head around and all of a sudden the audio is coming out of the weird spots, doesn't feel right. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, I was really impressed with all that stuff too.
So I don't know. I think that'll be really cool, because like one of the big things, like when you have a VR headset on that like really sells the experience, is like the really like spatial audio of like, you know, looking away from something and kind of like hearing it, you know, behind you and stuff. So I think that'll be
right.
That'll be really, really neat. So,
yeah. So anyway, WWDC has been really exciting already this week. And then I haven't even really dug into a lot of the stuff that they've done during the rest of the week in terms of like the developer sessions and stuff like that. I know there's a lot of info out there. So probably even more crazy stuff happening that I'll have to try and read up on when I have a chance. Mm-hmm. But before we jump into, we have I had a few more WWDC things that were kind of gaming related that we'll get to with our little news roundup or whatever. But before I jump in there, we actually got a couple emails.
Oh, sweet.
And I put a call out. Email us at podcast@tetrarcade.com. Or actually, one of these people sent us a message through Patreon, which is something else you can do. Patreon.com/tetrarcade. But anyway, I put a call out to send us some messages because we like feeling special, like somebody wants to actually talk to us. So we got a couple. One is from Jeff, and funny, the subject of this email is more gaming talk, less banter. So he says, "Hey guys, I know the banter
this week."
That's what I was just gonna say. It's like maybe we should have read this at the beginning. We could have heeded this advice. But hey guys, I know the banter in the beginning of the podcast is part of the show, but I think it's getting really long. Often I stop the cast because I just want to get to the gaming stuff. I get that I could scrub to the gaming stuff, but it's just a pain. Really enjoy the mobile gaming part of your podcast. Not a fan of the banter stuff before. Maybe a little would be okay. Just some thoughts. Take care, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff, for emailing us. And I do agree with you. I think part of that has crept into our show. Ever since we stopped playing the new games that came out every week, which I feel like I forget exactly why we ended up stopping that, but I feel like that was our show was more in thirds. It was like maybe 10 minutes of BSing in the beginning, and then we'd talk about some new stuff, and we'd talk about what games we've been playing that week or whatever. And I feel like that once we stopped kind of like doing that, it left more room for us to just go off and talk about whatever, which is I enjoy, but yeah, I understand
don't kind of like talk as much anymore since I switched over to Game Club. So it was just kind of nice having a little catch up, I guess.
That's true, too. Yeah, we're usually BSing back and forth every day and probably got it a lot out of our system.
I think we got away from like the going over like all the games of the week when it became completely overwhelming to even do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I forget. We stopped doing that before you had even left for Game Club, I believe.
Yeah, no, that's been like.
But it was getting very hard to even find a chance to play some games to even talk about or whatever. So
yeah,
but
I remember it was like the like quantity of game releases kind of like came to the point that we started like really relying on freelance writers.
Yeah,
and it was kind of like a lot of like what would happen would be like. You know, like you'd have like the high profile games that came out this week that came out like basically like the day before you record. And we had freelancers that are like, oh, I'll take this. I'll handle this game review. I'll handle this game review. I'll handle this game review. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'll like focus on this other stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and you wouldn't have a chance to really check out the games very much.
Right.
So it would make them hard to talk about or whatever, but yeah. I do kind of agree. Maybe we shouldn't be 50-50 bullshit and 50-50 gaming stuff. So I don't know. We can talk about that. But I'd love to hear other opinions. So if you have an opinion on that, podcast@tetrarcade.com, let us know what you think about the banter. Jeff is not a fan, but I understand, Jeff. And thank you very much for sending an email to us. And then we got a subject line, just a random email. This is from Anthony. Very good name. I named my son that, so good going. It says, hi, I enjoy the show. It's nice to have people talk genuinely about games and not spin the same crap that the rest of the internet talk about. It is not my type of thing to write random emails, but you guys sound like you need some inspiration with the way the world is right now. So I thought I would say hello from Australia, or good day, if you like. Anyway, I appreciate the effort you guys do to support indie developers. So thanks. Stay safe. Anthony. That's an awesome email. I love getting stuff like that. So thank you, Anthony. We did need a little inspiration, and it's always nice to hear where people are listening to the show from, because that's pretty cool too. People over in Australia, where you guys really kind of whipped that COVID thing into shape over there, the last chart I saw. But thank you again very much, you guys, for sending some emails in. And also, anyone else out there, feel free to send us some random emails or comment on the banter if you're a fan or you're not. Yeah, let us know, podcast@touchercade.com, or send us a tweet, or send us a something. Or actually, speaking of, I was going to say send us a Facebook, but I never check the Facebook for Touch Arcade, even though we get messages there. Our like support fellow, he set up like an auto response thing for when we get messages on Facebook. So it basically says like, hey, thanks for reaching out. Actually send us an email instead, because we never really check Facebook, or something along those lines. But I actually looked at our messages the other day, and it was kind of funny that I did, because here it is. So Chris sent us a message and says, hey, Eli and Jared, if you guys would like some basic pointers to get your uke playing off the ground, just hit me up. I used to teach private music lessons as my main gig, but I don't anymore. I'd be happy to get you started with a Google Meet or something if it would be helpful. No charge. After all, I already get a great podcast from you guys.
Oh, shit.
And then he got the auto response, which I feel bad about. I was going to send him a personalized message. But I'll say, if you are listening, thank you very much for the offer. Thank you for sending a message to us.
I need to have time to do more than look at this thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'd have to find some time, a cool little private session. Does sound very interesting to me, but I'd have to find the time to do that. And it's always funny looking back, like to last Friday when we recorded, and it was like, oh yeah, dude, we both have ukes. It's super exciting. We're going to learn a song by next week's show and we'll play it and stuff like that. It's like, I haven't picked that thing up since last Friday, let alone look up any sort of song to learn or anything like that. It's always like, that's just always the way it goes with any sort of plans we have to do stuff. But
all of my spare time has gone into this this house we're getting, and the little time that has remained has gone into these like 15-minute sessions of Last of Us 2.
Oh, there you go. In short bursts. How is it in short bursts like that?
It's good. I mean, it's a really intense game with a lot of like, I don't know, it's like a really good like sense of dread to it, which is like kind of neat how they're so successful at doing that. But at the same time, it's like, it's like, okay, I just got to the part where you need to start like killing dogs and stuff. And I'm just like, this is just kind of a bummer. And like, even though they're like attack dogs, it's still like, you know, I don't know. So it's a good game.
That's the theme I've definitely heard from people about that game, is that it is not fun. It is very uncomfortable to play.
Well, it's interesting how they nailed that, I guess. But I just like don't know if this is like the time for a game like that.
Right.
You know, like if everything were just normal and you were playing this game that was like kind of a bummer in this like, you know, apocalypse world that's had this like virus that has just completely fucked everything up and everything else. And I'd be like, oh, okay, neat. This is kind of cool. But instead it's like, wow, this is feels a little on the nose, guys.
Yeah, right. No, I agree.
Bang. We don't need to sidetrack too much.
So anyway, back to that. Thanks for sending emails. Thanks, Chris, for the Facebook message. And send us some more messages if you like, ask questions or whatever you like. Doesn't matter. We might read it on the air. If you don't say too many bad things. Where'd my list of stories? Oh, here
first
it is.
First up, I got the Apex Legends story.
I'm having, perfect. I'm having tab anxiety right now. so anyway, into the mobile gaming news of the week, Apex Legends, which is the Titanfall, you know, takes place in the Titanfall universe, but it's a battle royale game for PC and console. A while back, I think like a year ago now, they had talked about maybe bringing it to mobile at some point. And that was when Fortnite was doing gangbusters and PUBG Mobile was like, you know, the Battle Royale thing was taken off on mobile in a really big way. And so obviously this brand new Apex Legends launches and everyone's like, well, you should have a mobile version too. Everyone else does. And that just kind of made sense. But it's been a while now. And I haven't really heard anything about that until this week. They did like a fireside chat with the CEO of EA, who confirmed that Apex Legends for mobile is planned for a soft launch this year. So I guess that doesn't mean it's going to be out or whatever, but the mobile version still is in the works if you were looking forward to that sort of thing, which I feel like with this type of game especially, but with lots of types of games really, it needs to be, it doesn't matter where you play it, and it doesn't matter who you play with, what platform they have either. Like, everyone should be able to play with each other. Your progress should transfer to whatever platform you happen to be on. So you can play on your PC when you're at home, you can play on your console, you can hop onto your phone and play when you're on the go or whatever, and everything's just this nice seamless transfer. I feel like that's how gaming should be in the future. So it's nice that this mobile version is finally coming out. I don't know if it's going to be too little too late. I don't really know how well Apex Legends is doing. I haven't really looked into it.
It's like friends of mine are, it's like everyone has like the battle royale that they like. You know, it's like everyone has like the MOBA they like. And I don't really know. I mean, Fortnite obviously seems to be the most popular, but like, I don't know. I have like a good split of like friends that are really into Fortnite, friends that are really into Call of Duty one, friends that are really into Apex, and friends that are really into PUBG.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm curious.
I feel like Fortnite's been cooling. And I think PUBG is actually feels like, just I get a sense that it's the more popular one now. Especially with the, when you take in the mobile versions into consideration, though, PUBG Mobile is more popular than Fortnite on mobile. So that's kind of crazy, too. And like trends like that can be pretty wildly different from different regions and different countries and stuff, too. So pretty crazy, though. But Apex Legends being on mobile should be a good thing. So that's something to look forward to this year, at least a soft launch, and kind of see how they handle all that. The boys at Noodle Cake, those Canadian crazies, they introduced this game called Motorball. It's really like a top-down Rocket League, sort of like used cars to play soccer type game. I feel like we saw it forever ago at like GDC or something like that.
Yeah, I might even still been with Touch Arcade when we saw this one.
Yeah, and then they actually officially unveiled it. It was December of 2018, which feels like forever ago. But anyway, they hadn't really talked much about it since. I kind of didn't know what the deal was with it. In the meantime, about this time last year, they launched Golf Blitz, which has been a big success for them. And I didn't know this at the time either, but the back end they created to run all of Golf Blitz's multiplayer stuff is the same technology they're going to be using in this Motorball game. So that kind of makes sense why it's taken a little while if they're going to really make sure that their whole back end system is functioning properly with Golf Blitz and stuff first before introducing a new game or whatever. However, Motorball is shaping up and is to the point now where they are looking for beta testers for it. So if you want to beta test it, there's a trailer up on our story about it now. Check it out. It looks like, top-down 2D Rocket League. I don't know how else to explain it. Although there are some wacky power-ups and stuff like that, and they did throw Mario Kart-ish out there too. So Mario Kart meets Rocket League. What did I call it? Rocket Ball? I don't know. Mario Kart meets Rocket League equals Motorball, I guess you could put on the back of the box. But anyway, they are doing a beta test for both iOS and Android because it's going to be a cross-platform multiplayer game. So you can sign up over the official site. There's a link in our story. It's a closed beta, so they'll have to choose you, but might as well throw your name in the ring.
It would help if you messaged Ryan Noodlecake on Twitter with the choose me Valentine from Ralph Williams.
Whoever can tweet him more times with that will definitely get picked for the beta, I think. So, but anyway, Motorball is the name of the game. It looks really cool. Beta test coming up. Sign up for it. Pascal's Wager, we talked about plenty of times before. It's the built for mobile Dark Souls-ish type game that's actually really good. And it's been out on iOS for like 6 months, I want to say. I think it came out in January. And it's had a couple of pretty significant updates since then. One of them was adding a quote-unquote easy mode, because the game is pretty darn hard if you're not used to Dark Souls type of games. And then they had another update adding in a bunch of new story content. And then they actually have also released a paid expansion pack most recently called Deep Into the Dark Mist. So the base game plus some free expansions plus some paid expansions all in the span of 6 months. That's pretty good. However, a lot of people were wondering when the Android version would launch. The answer is right now, this week. It launched today, I guess. So there you go. You can go.
Risky gamble to release a premium game on Android.
Be
interesting.
Though. For real, right? It is a paid game, just like it is on iOS. It's $3.99 right now, but I believe that's a discounted price. I want to say the game's normally $6.99, which is still pretty cheap when you think about it. But anyway, so if you're on Android and you've been anxious for this game or any kind of premium sort of game, you should go check it out now. Pascal's Wager, it is now available. So that's cool. This came as sort of a surprise to me. Don't Starve is a game that it's a survival game that launched on iOS way back in 2015, I think. Yeah, that's right, 2015. So the original game launched in 2013 and basically throws you on this island and asks you to survive against a bunch of horrific monster type things, but also you need to scrounge up some supplies and basically your general survival game. But I thought the kind of cool twist here was that you could actually go like mad and you had to sort of fight a lot of sort of crazy mental stuff going on too, which, to be fair, that would probably happen if you were stranded on in some forest somewhere or whatever. So anyway, the Don't Starve Pocket Edition, when it launched in 2015, was a pretty big hit. And then they brought out Don't Starve Shipwrecked as a separate game, which was actually the main expansion pack release for the console and PC version. So those two games have done super well and fit pretty well on mobile too. So this week, they actually announced a brand new Don't Starve game called Don't Starve New Home. The interesting thing here is this is going to be for mobile exclusively, iOS and Android. And it's going to be, it sounds like it's going to be super free to play. Basically the Don't Starve formula, but with a lot of social stuff and multiplayer stuff thrown into the mix. There is a multiplayer expansion for the regular Don't Starve too, but it sounds like it'll be kind of a spin on that blended with sort of a game as a service type experience. So expect lots of weekly events and lots of new content and constant updates and things like that in this version of Don't Starve, which could be cool. I don't know. I don't want to like instantly be like, oh, they're ruining Don't Starve with free to play, blah, 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 which maybe they are. I don't know. But I also could see this type of game fitting very well into that type of mold where it's like, yeah, you play online with other people. And, you know, you play through events together, you do raids, you do whatever, PvP, like, I don't know. I feel like you could make a good case for this being a nice, like, free-to-play online experience that at the same time doesn't take away the regular premium Don't Starve versions either. Those are still there, so.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I'm sure this will probably do really well for them because, you know, there are a lot of people probably curious about Don't Starve that didn't want to spend the $10 or whatever the main version costs and... Yes, yeah. Want to hop in.
So the other interesting thing about this is that it is Clay Entertainment's the ones who created Don't Starve in the first place. This game is actually being developed by where did I put their name? Xingku Games, and it'll be published by Tencent. So that's kind of crazy too that Clay is actually not involved themselves. In developing this game, they just kind of said, hey, you can use the Don't Starve thing and make your own mobile game out of it. So kind of interesting. They will be doing some beta testing too. So just like in Motorball, you can go to the game's official website and sign up. This will also be a closed beta, so you'll have to get picked. Also kicking off in July. But if you do get to take part in the beta, you'll earn an exclusive in-game item that will carry over to the full game once it's live. So if you like to brag about being the coolest person in town and have the exclusive item, you should probably sign up and hope to get into the beta test there. I don't know. I'm interested in seeing where this goes. I would definitely give it a
benefit. I could see some ways they could like make this free-to-play to not like completely ruin the game.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, like particularly if like I don't know, I don't think they'd want to just like blow up the brand, making it like the ultra freemium.
I don't think so either. I think they truly do just want to take like an alternate spin on the survival genre that kind of Don't Starve lives in, and make it like this social mobile thing with tons of people playing. I mean, I can see that. Cool.
There's a lot that they could do. because you could come across like different recipes or discover recipes or stuff like that. Like, there's a lot that you could do that like just makes it like kind of like a free to play game where you're basically like buying progress, you know, like that wouldn't really upset things too much, I guess.
Yeah, and they also mentioned that every player, you actually will build your own home that's persistent throughout the whole game. So that's kind of another thing too, is like you're probably going to be collecting items and decorations and junk for your house so that, you know, other people can come visit and check it out. You can go visit other people's and whatever. I don't know. I think it sounds cool. So anyway, yeah. Beta next month, and we'll keep tabs on a release date for that one. But pretty big news. A new Don't Starve game is going to be mobile only. This was kind of a surprise also. The World Ends With You solo remix, the iOS version of the game, just got updated for the first time since 2015. Got full screen iPhone 10 support and support for iOS 13, which is good because for some people, I think depending on the device, it would hang in a black screen and wasn't working for a while. And I want to say this was one of the games that was originally broken for like 2 years on iOS like 9 or something like that too. If I remember correctly, I feel like this thing languished for a while and was unplayable and broken. So you got to hand it to Square Enix that they, at the very least, eventually come around to supporting their games with fixes and stuff like that. It sometimes takes a long time. I think probably what prompted this, especially with like the full screen support and stuff, is the Switch version that came out, I think last year, which had full touchscreen and widescreen support and I think like high resolution graphics and stuff like that. So it kind of makes sense to why not port all that work you put in the Switch version over to the other touchscreen versions of the game. Kind of makes sense. So anyway, super good game, very nice one to have on mobile and be able to stick in your pocket and play whenever you want. Always been kind of on the pricey side, so it's nice that they have continued to update it and stuff. Yeah, it's an $18 game, plus you can buy, looks like, some extra stuff in the game if you wanted to. So, yeah, very possible you invested some bucks into this one. So, happy to see it get supported, and especially getting widescreen support.
Yeah, no, this is a surprise. Like, I kind of assumed that this would just be, you know.
Sean, I think, said the same thing. He was like, I was pretty sure they were just going to write this one off at this point because it originally launched, I think, in 2012 when it first came to iOS, which was a long damn time ago. And so, you know, I don't know. It's sad to say, but it's like how many years of support are you expecting to get out of something that you bought for like less than $20, which sadly probably should be forever. But I mean, it's not always feasible. And then in terms of like how long it takes for Square Enix to update stuff, it's also really interesting to dig into that because a lot of times they farm that out to a third-party studio who may or may not be available at the time something breaks. And so sometimes it might be like, yeah, we can fix that, but we've got this other commitment and we can't get to it for 9 months or 12 months or something like that too. And so it's not always just Square Enix not caring. Sometimes there's some logistical reasons why these things take a long time too. Mm-hmm. However, not being updated since 2015, that's quite a while. So kind of cool that they did that. And The World Ends With You is a very good game. Everyone should play and buy.
Yeah, and no, this I had a... I played this on the DS, I guess?
Yeah, the original DS is, I think, when it first came out. And yeah, I played through it on there, too. Pretty crazy to think about that this game is still... that beloved. It's definitely a cult classic. So
yeah, no, this is a cool.
Anyway,
cool thing.
Back to a couple of other tidbits of WWDC news that relate to gaming. First off, was a lot of improvements for Apple Arcade are coming, which is kind of cool. They will be improving the store experience, which. Already, I don't know if you've noticed, and I think I want to say we talked about this before, but if you go in the App Store, Apple Arcade games get like the luxury treatment in the App Store. They get like a huge banner, animated banner thing, and they get like all sorts of extra information. Like a lot of times it'll tell you if it supports multiplayer, if it supports controllers, or if it supports this or that or whatever. All these things that you've always wanted other game pages to have, like Apple Arcade has that information.
Not only that, but
And it's always been kind of
always wanted them to expose that data to like App Shopper and stuff, so we could like have a page that's like, hey, here's all the games that say they have controller support or whatever else.
And yeah, it's super annoying. So I'm like looking at Shantae and the Seven Sirens right now, and it's got a huge animated banner up top. It looks so awesome. It's got the ratings and the age and the category and all that, the size. All this stuff is in like this nice little horizontal scrolling bar. And then you got your screenshot. It's just like a better experience all around. And then the rest of it's kind of similar to every other app page. But it just seemed like kind of shitty that Apple's like, oh, yeah, well, our special service gets all this special App Store treatment and everyone else's games just or whatever. Well, that will be changing with iOS 14 because they are bringing a lot of those features over to not just Apple Arcade games, but also. Every game will be able to say, yes, this supports controllers or this supports achievements, or it'll be able to even list the achievements and stuff like that. There will be more social features built into the games and yeah, lots of other stuff that I feel like we've been asking for a long time. Still no Game Center app coming back though, which I still am kind of sour about. I always thought that was,
Yeah, it seems weird, right?
yeah. It always seemed really stupid that Apple would even create Game Center in the first place and then take it away the way that they did to only kind of live in the background as sort of this back-end service when in reality a lot of people liked the Game Center app and liked to be able to add and remove friends and do all that stuff, look at other people's progress and achievements and things like that. So it sounds like some of that stuff will be built into the App Store itself. And it sounds like they're going to be building in an upcoming game sort of feature into the App Store too, where you'll be able to pre-order games and stuff like that, which you can
Yeah.
sort of do now,
Seems
but
cool.
I think it'll be a little more fleshed out and make more sense. But yeah, or even filtering the store by things like release date or updates, or if a game supports controllers or not, that's a really big deal. So that's pretty cool. One of the other announcements was ARKit 4, which it's been, I guess, 4 years now that they've been
How much do you care about this? I mean,
going on with ARKit. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm still waiting for it to take off. I feel like I was real impressed with it in the beginning, but it never really materialized into anything super meaningful. But I do still think that someday that day is coming where AR will be like a really ubiquitous technology that everybody's phone uses, not just iPhones, but. And you'll use it for a lot of non-gaming stuff. You see a little bit of that dip in, like it's not crazy now to like use the IKEA app to like see what a couch would look like in your living room or something like that. Like I feel like that sort of thing is a lot more normal now. Or see what a vase looks like on your table. Or you know, shopping and beaming a virtual product into your house is probably one of the most mainstream uses of AR right now, I think. But I also think down the line, it's not going to be too crazy to, especially when they have wearables, be able to just look at restaurants and see Yelp reviews instantly pop up and stuff like that. That's sort of where I envision the future of AR, and we're not there yet. But Apple does keep improving the technology, and there do keep being AR games released. And of course, there's things like Pokemon Go, which rely on it. Pretty heavily. So it's nice that there's new features for them. Always curious to see where it goes, even if I don't care personally about AR too much. And then there's this was kind of a big shocker too. There's going to be keyboard and mouse support for gaming on iPad
Yeah,
OS.
it's very surprising.
Yeah, not something I would have expected, but really cool, especially for games like Civilization 6 or the other games that are like pretty straight. PC ports over to mobile, where using a keyboard and mouse might be more comfortable. Or perhaps you simply have that set up at home where your iPad is like your desktop computer. And when you're sitting at your desk, you have a keyboard and mouse. And when you're out and about, you're using the touchscreen. Now you don't really have to compromise. You can do both. I guess if you wanted to get weird, maybe some first-person shooters will support that sort of thing too. And I don't know, you can play Counter-Strike on your iPad or something. But, yeah, cool that they're adding that functionality. I feel like that's kind of a no-brainer and surprise that it hasn't happened before, but also still surprising seeing them actually do it. So yeah, keyboard, mouse, and trackpad options for gaming is coming just for iPad, which I guess that makes sense, but
yeah. So like this kind of like loops back to what I was saying before, and that, like, you know, they already have all the groundwork laid. Like, why the fuck is, like, Mac OS just not on iPad, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. It's we're getting there. We have to be getting there, because this just seems like where everything is heading towards.
Like they're,
no matter what
they're like
saying,
tap dancing around the entire thing, but like doing the thing.
Totally. And then the final little bit I had was there's a lot more controller stuff happening in iOS 14. It seems like something clicked with whoever runs this stuff at Apple, where they were like, oh man, we got to really take gaming controllers seriously. Even though we've been wanting that for literally decades. But anyway, iOS 14 will support the new Xbox Elite 2 controller, which is a good thing, because a lot of people have that controller. It's a pricey one, but it's a really good one. It's also super adaptive. And then speaking of that, they will also support the what's the controller called? Oh, it is called the adaptive controller.
Yeah.
The
one that looks like the two DJ things with the
it looks like a DJ setup, but it's basically two big touchpads that for people with disabilities aren't able to grip a normal controller. The adaptive controller has been really celebrated for being a really cool, accessible way for more people to be able to play games. So it's really, really not a surprise that Apple is making an effort to support that, because they are super all about accessibility stuff, typically. So anyway, that's some pretty good news. And then other tidbits are that Rumble will now be able to be supported through game controllers, which I think is pretty cool. And button remapping, which is a biggie, is not only coming on like a system-wide level, you'll be able to remap buttons per game, and it will save a profile for that particular game. So that I feel like is like
that's a weird one, right? Like I never would have expected that.
No, yeah, and pretty awesome that, you know, you can set up certain games a certain way and have it remember how it's set up. That's just going way above and beyond in terms of options, I believe, but that's a good thing. So anyway, lots of cool. And then finally, motion controls will be supported too. So if you have a gaming controller that has gyro in it, like a PS4 controller or whatever, you'll be able to use that for motion control stuff like you would if you were actually carrying your device around using gyro aiming or whatever. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, a lot of big controller announcements and a lot of big push into supporting gaming stuff with iOS 14, which is pretty cool. So pretty awesome. And like I said, there's a lot more WWDC stuff that I haven't dug into in terms
there's
of whatever
lot.
They've been doing the rest
there's
of the week. And yeah,
lot.
Hopefully I can just jump over to MacRumors and they'll be like, here's all the stuff you need to know, so you don't have to go digging. But anyway, pretty exciting week, a lot of cool announcements, and yeah, I think that's about all I had to talk about this week. Are we looking on time there?
Yeah, we're good. We can crash this bus whenever you want.
Crash this bus? Oh, I feel like I had some Switch stuff I wanted to talk about.
The Star Wars Pod Racer game came out. I really want to play that, but I am not buying Switch games until...
Yeah, I have super put a moratorium on me buying any more Switch games right now. And especially with... There was a big sale, too, where like my wish list lit up like a Christmas tree with sales, and I still was like, nope, no, I am not doing that. I'm not buying more games. I'm playing through the ones I have, damn it. And we'll see how good that goes. Of course I say that, but I did break that rule because I bought Duke Nukem, but it was $5 on pre-order. So $5 for Duke Nukem, like, how could you not do that? So, and I have been playing it actually, so good for me. But anyway, other than that, no, I'm not going crazy buying sale games anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm the same way. All right, well, let's put a pin in this one and come back next week, I guess.
Yes, so thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. We are primarily supported through our readers and our listeners and our viewers. So if you like what we do and want to see us continue doing it, please consider checking out patreon.com/touch arcade and throwing a little support our way. Even as little as $1 a month helps. You can also do your Amazon shopping through TetraK.com/Amazon. And at no extra cost to you, we can get a little piece of anything you'd be buying anyway. That can add up and help us out a lot as well. Other than that, please feel free to send us an email at podcast@TetraK.com and let us know how we're doing, or just say hi, or just say whatever the heck you want. So thanks again so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of the Tetra Cade Show.
See ya.